Hi, Women of Strength. Before we jump into today's episode, I just wanted to share something that's really close to my heart. If you're planning a VBAC or even just starting to think about one, you don't have to piece everything together on your own. You don't have to find every blog or hunt down a specific podcast episode. The VBAC Link Parent Prep Course was created by our founders, Julie and Megan, who are doulas and VBAC moms themselves. I actually took it when I was preparing for my own VBAC, long before I was a host of the podcast, just as a mom who needed clarity, confidence, and evidence-based information. So I can say, from a personal standpoint, that I know you'll love it. We also have a VBAC birth plan guidebook with a drag and drop template, and that's the exact template I used for my own VBAC birth. It made communicating with my care team so much more smooth. So if you're looking for practical, supportive VBAC prep from people who truly get it, you can find both the course and the guidebook at thevbaclink.com. All right, let's get into today's episode. Women of Strength, welcome back to the VBAC Link. I am your host, Lily, and I am joined today by my amazing, beautiful, and amazingly talented co-host, Paige. We are so excited to bring you another incredible VBAC story today. We get to talk with Rachel, who is a NICU nurse and future nurse practitioner. We are just so excited for you to hear her stories. Before we dive in, we do just want to give a trigger warning that during this episode, there is some speak of infant passing away, and that is really hard. And it's not Rachel's story, but it is a story that she has witnessed as a nurse and brought up in her episode. So we just want you to know and to be aware of that. And she gives a trigger warning as well before she discusses it. So wanted you to know that. Otherwise, we're just super stoked for you to hear her stories. She's an amazing advocate for herself and all of the things. So before we do that, Paige has a review of the week for us. And after that, we will dive in.
I do. This review came to us in an email. And if you have something that you want to ask us or some messages for us in the form of a review, you can send us an email at info@thevbaclink.com. And this was a review of our doula certification course. If you don't know, we have two courses, one for parents specifically, and one also for doulas to learn all about how to support VBAC families. It's extremely thorough, and I've taken it myself before we were hosts. Our founders, Megan and Julie, created the course. Yeah. Okay. So this, we got an email that just brought us so much joy. It was from Molly, and she said, I wanted to tell you personally about my first VBAC birth, my third and final donor certification birth. The course I took was a game changer for us. I had materials in my hand that I could refer to and make suggestions to our fabulous nurse. In addition to having all the info we needed to communicate with the medical side of this birth and the confidence to speak up about everything, we relied heavily on my work as a spinning babies aware practitioner. I believe it was my confidence in my VBAC knowledge that led the birthing team to support the moves we needed to get baby in the most favorable position. The nurses were fully involved in supporting us because I was trusted as the VBAC professional doula. So my gratitude flows your way. I will share this info with my colleagues as we rock this birthing world. And then I love her PS. She goes, PS, it was a long birth and I am still sleep deprived, but I wanted you to hear about this as soon as I could share. She also includes more robust examples on how the course specifically helped her client. But she says, I'm still enjoying the oxytocin high of a beautiful birth. So thank you, Molly. Congratulations to you and to this wonderful VBAC mom. She sent a photo on her. The mom just looks so proud and happy. We always love to see fist pump photos of you rocking your VBACs. And anyway, we're just so proud of you, Molly, and thank you for sharing.
Yes. And Women of Strength, if you have not had an opportunity to leave us a review, you can do so on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And like Paige said, you are also always welcome to send us an email to leave us a review or to chat or have questions. Paige and I personally are in that inbox every single day and also in the DMs on Facebook and Instagram. So if you want to chat with us, we're here for you. So, all right, my friends, well, after our intro, we will be back with Rachel, and we can't wait for you to hear her story.
Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
Hello, Women of Strength. Welcome back. We are so excited to be here today with our friend Rachel to hear all about her VBAC. I am going to read just a little bit about her, and then we will get into her incredible story. So, Rachel is a research and development fundraiser turned NICU nurse and currently finishing up her NP in women's and gender-related healthcare. Woohoo! That's so amazing. She has two kids, a three-year-old who was her urgent C-section, and her almost one-year-old VBAC. She is driven by best practices and evidence-based healthcare, and from a young age was drawn to the idea of physiological birth and supporting others to have the birth experiences they want through research-focused, trauma-informed, safe care. So, Women of Strength, you also need to know that we are recording right around Christmas time, but this is probably not airing until March. So, it's Christmas in March for Rachel, and we're excited to have her today. So, Rachel, we are going to hand the floor over to you, and we are just so excited to hear about your stories and hear what it was like, especially to be someone that sees the high-end care that babies can need and then to pursue a VBAC. So, we can't wait to hear. So, the floor is yours, my friend.
Awesome. Yeah, this is so surreal. I listened to probably like 90% of the VBAC Link podcasts before I had my own VBAC. So that was pretty, I don't know. I kept being like, oh, it'd be so cool to be on there one day. And now it's my time, which is just, yeah, just wild. But yeah, I guess like, so my background is I was really interested in midwifery from like a really young age. I worked at Whole Foods before Amazon acquired it in high school. And when I'd be like slow at work, I'd read like Mothering Magazine. And we had a local birth center that I interned at in high school. And just all things about physiological birth were really interesting to me. Like not in a prescriptive way of like everyone needs this specific experience. But for me, it was just something I was really interested in. And that kind of like carried throughout my, I guess, like young adult life. It was something I knew I wanted. Flash forward, as you said, I was in research and then fundraising, and I just really wasn't in what I saw my long-term career being. So I started looking around and was like, you know what? I want to be a midwife. That was like my thought. And so I went back to school for nursing. And when I was done my bachelor's, I was like, I want to work for a bit. And during that kind of like end of my nursing degree and then into when I was working, I really realized I wanted to be kind of on the NICU side of it, like attending births. I always kind of felt myself drawn to the babies. I remember a midwife acquaintance saying like, you kind of will know where your heart is based on those experiences and those like really like key moments. And that for me was very much the case. So I was like, okay, I want to go. And I want to be a NICU nurse for a while. I think what's interesting about that is, as you said, I kind of experienced the most insane births. Like I've been to countless vaginal births and C-sections, largely C-sections. And I think one of the things that I've realized through my journey is like how much trauma you carry as a provider, even before you have your own birth experience.
Yeah.
And that was something that like I don't think I fully experienced. Sorry, my son's like random toy keeps going off.
That's mom life. This is real life. Yeah, right.
This is it. But I don't think I fully appreciated that before I had my son. Like I knew what I wanted. And like during when I was pregnant with him, like I did all the things, you know, I did chiropractic care, I did pelvic floor physical therapy because I had like a long time ago, I used to be an indoor rock climber and I had a labral tear injury in my hip. And I was just like, I knew from like that experience in the past, even though I didn't have pain, I knew my pelvic floor was on the tighter side. So as soon as I got pregnant, I was like, all right, let's do pelvic floor physical therapy, keep up with, you know, the spinal alignment, like did acupuncture at the beginning of my pregnancy, like try to think what else I did. I hired a doula that I loved and actually supported me through both of my births. And fortunately was VBAC kind of trained and trauma informed, and didn't know that when I hired her for my first birth, but that really was amazing for my second experience, my VBAC. But yeah, I kind of like, I did all of these things. I did hypnobirthing, and I still, the thing I didn't really confront was kind of the things I've seen in my own practice that have, would kind of create those points or triggers of just like anxiety. I think one of those things, and I like want to say like a trigger warning here, is when I was pregnant, I attended a birth in the ER that did not go, that ended in demise. So like if anyone wants to skip this, but 17 weeks pregnant, working night shift in the NICU, hadn't even told some of my coworkers yet, just because no particular reason, like it was a planned pregnancy and everything, but I was just like, eh, let's just see how things go. Get called to like an emergency code in the ER, and it was an unassisted home birth, vaginal birth after two C-sections, where babies had gotten trapped, cord was compressed. They got to the hospital within 10 minutes, but baby was gone. And I, like, pregnant, actively involved in that resuscitation, did not go well. And then the mom and dad had no idea, like, the extent of what was going on. So then when we came over to be like, the baby didn't make it, they thought that we were coming over to be like, oh, everything's fine. Because they really, because they were unassisted and because of all, like, I guess, like, just like the way things had happened, they just really didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah.
And I think besides like the, like that would be an example of like an extremely traumatic thing. But I think the separately, like I was going to a birth center at the time. So even though I worked in a hospital, I was going to a birth center that does attend births in a hospital setting across the street, but is very much seen in my hospital system as like a problem, or not even a problem. I should say just like other, like, oh, those people who go to the birth center, oh, like they don't want to have the best potential care, and just like not really appreciating like what that type of patient-centered care for healthy pregnancies really looks like, or the point of, you know, a midwife, as we all kind of know here, is you can appropriately escalate care and that you're taking care of low-risk pregnancies, and that is, you know, not everyone has a 27-weeker, not everyone has this extreme cord compression breach birth, honestly, you know. And the way people were talking about this was kind of like as if those two things were analogous. So like having this unassisted birth at home, they'd actually tried to go to the birth center, and they're like, you know, we're not baby's breech, VBAC after two C-sections, like we really can't do this. And they decided to kind of go their own way.
And can we talk about that for just a second for folks that are kind of tuning in? Unassisted meaning it's not a home birth with a midwife. Yeah. These folks had made a decision autonomously to birth at home without the attendance of a midwife. So we're talking kind of different safety protocols, right? Because they're acting essentially as their own medical provider, potentially, and the difference being with like your birth center, out of hospital birth, or many home birth scenarios where there is a midwife. So as you're kind of navigating those differences of like you were going to a birth center planning an out of hospital birth, but you had a different level of care. And so just for the folks listening, just the kind of differences in like an unassisted or a wild birth or pregnancy versus a home birth with a midwife and things like that.
And I just also say, I think they had some type of like birth keeper, but it was, and I don't know if that also contributed to them not seeking care sooner, that they thought like, oh, this person might like let us know when we need to go somewhere. And that is not what a birth keeper does. And so it's just like, I have no idea the extent of like what the interviewing process looked like with that, or the awareness of the parents or what have you. I think the bigger issue for why they sought this, which is something I continue to think about in my own practice and how I approach parents or how people make choices about the births they want, is that these people clearly wanted an experience that they were not going to be able to get in a healthcare setting that would be more traditional. And so they sought it elsewhere. And I think that's an example of, like, is it a decision I would make? No. But I can also appreciate that they were looking for support that wasn't going to be there for them. And this is why I, like, also need to not be pressing our own beliefs on everyone, because I think the bigger issue with them wasn't so much that it was a VBAC after two C-sections, it was that baby was breech. And most of the hospitals in this area, I live outside of Philadelphia, do not do breech birth. There's like one hospital kind of like an hour away. I actually have a midwife acquaintance who, they work there and they do breech births, but it's not something that would just be like everybody defaults into. Yeah. So it's like, I think that's kind of one of those things where you're like, you have to look at the whole picture. And like, I really saw that. But anyway, my coworkers, I feel like, kept just being like, this is like, how could someone do this? And just like, not really. It was a terrible thing. Obviously, a baby died. But at the same time, trying to recognize and appreciate, like, what drove these people to make that decision? Like, were they led to the best choice for them because they felt like they had to go in that direction? Or is it because, you know, they genuinely just, you know, wanted to go rogue? And I feel like most people, there's something more there to tease apart.
And I just think, like, what compassionate care you give to people to be able to have this and look back on this and to have the thought of, wow, I wonder what was happening within the system that was broken that led someone to wanting a different experience that they weren't supported in. And so I just want you to know that, like, I just think that that's incredible to, like, to have the, to be able to look back on and say, wow, like, what can we change in the system to make people feel more supported? Because that's how we do it, right? Like, that's the good stuff. So thank you for sharing.
Well, I think just everything comes with risks and benefits. And I think it's just like the best way to have people make the best decisions is to talk to them about all the things for them to consider. And that doesn't always happen. And I think I also was really lucky not only seeing the NICU side of this like crazy situation, but because I was going to a birth center at the time, and this was a big conversation in the birth community, I also heard from, you know, my midwives outside of the hospital, like how even that felt very other for them, or like why they felt that some, like how this all happened. It was just like a much bigger question to me. So it's like, and while I'm like trying to piece all that apart, I think that's just an example of just not appreciating all of these like stories and experience that you carry with them, because it's like you're so focused on like, well, the person here, this parent is having that experience. I'm not having that experience. But then you still see it secondarily. And actually, one of the VBAC Links episodes that I thought was really helpful is you have forget which number it is, but her name's Jessica. She was a NICU nurse turned VBAC mom, and it just, like, I really identified with her talking about how she tried to, you know, reconcile her experiences as a nurse seeing trauma. And I think that was the first time, which is when I was pregnant with my second, that I really started to appreciate, like, there's layers here just to everything. And it's not just about experiencings, but witnessing. Like, you can have other forms of trauma. But anyway, long story short, like, I thought I was doing all the right things. I stopped working at like 38 weeks. So I was like, it's so much discomfort. I'd had Braxton Hicks from like 32 weeks on. Around 32 weeks as well, I found out from the birth center that they had run my insurance wrong and that they no longer would be covered. And so I had to make a really tough decision, which was, we had just bought a house at the time. I'm like, do we try to find the cash to make this happen? Or do I use my very good health insurance I have and give birth at one of the hospitals in my system? And I think at that time I was just like, I've got my doula, I've got my support system, like I know what I want, I have my convictions, I have my knowledge, like I'm gonna, I it just makes sense to go to the hospital. Which is, you know, looking back, I'm like, it just makes you wonder so many things. But I was with a new practice. There were only two providers in it at the time, traditional OBs. And one was like absolutely fine. The other one was very much night and day. Like I'd come in one time and she would be like, oh yeah, like let's be as like hands off natural as possible, blah, blah, blah. I'd come in the next time. She's like, well, your baby's measuring large. So like maybe we should be talking about an induction at 39 weeks. And I'm like, I'm aware of the arrival study and I'm not interested. Like, thank you. Like, okay. And it just kept being like this back and forth, back and forth. Flash forward, I'm post dates, and she's like, I feel comfortable with, you know, every other day NSTs. Me, I mean, I've seen crazy things happen. I would love some monitoring. Let me know all the things. I had some prodromal labor for like 24 hours at one point, stopped. I came in for my last NST and they're like, you're contracting every 3 minutes. And I was like, yeah, I know, but it's not feeling robust. I was like 41 and 2 at the time. And I was like, this is not really progressing. Like, I'd rather go home. And then they were like, I had one other elevated blood pressure during my pregnancy that was like a manual. I'm sorry, it was an automatic cuff. They redid it manually and they're like, oh, this is normal. But they're like, but we're going to put in that you're hypertensive. And I was like, why? That's not how blood pressure works. It's a chronic thing. They're like, no, because it's just like, we just need to do that. So we have it. Like, which looking back, I'm like, what? So they were taking my blood pressures and an NST. They do that regularly on cycle. They're all normal. They took one during a contraction. It was elevated. And then they took another one. It was normal. But they're like, oh, you're hypertensive. And I think at that point too, you know, like this is what I'm talking about with my own trauma. They're like, oh, you should go down to L&D because who knows, you might be preeclamptic, like your post dates, like all these things. And I didn't have any signs of that. And I never had a protein in my urine or whatever. But I just, in my head, I'm just like, I've seen some crazy stuff. Like even though I feel like that's not happening, it can't hurt to get my blood work done. And then I go down, get that done. Everything's normal. We only had one car at the time. By the time my husband took an Uber with all of our stuff to the hospital, I was just like, my labor had stopped. And like, we should have just gone home. But they're like, why don't we just give you a Cervidil overnight? And I was like, okay, because if that doesn't work, I'm just going to go home. But of course, like, flash forward, they took the Cervidil out. They accidentally broke my water. I don't think it was anything like they did because it's just that's the Cervidil itself, just like for listeners, has like a rough edge to it. And I think just between the fact that he was kind of, you know, where he was and his like 41 and 2, I think it was just like, And of course it was like meconium stained and I was GBS positive. And then it was like, okay, we got to get this train rolling. And like, I heard all the things too. Like I was a meconium aspiration when I was born at 43 weeks back in the day. Yeah. And like, I ended up going home and having respiratory issues. I ended up with pneumonia because of the aspiration, wound back up in the peds unit. So like, I knew like this stuff was just like, okay, I know that's a, like, let's figure it out. And so then the idea was we're going to start low and slow on PIT because I was like, postpartum hemorrhages run in my family. Like, I do not need this making things worse. And the provider at the time was being like really weird and cagey. And she was just like, yes, okay. And I was like, so I want to be titrated like half the, like, I'd rather have more frequent titrations of less so that we know if we get into a good pattern, we don't need to do any more. And she was like, yeah, they'll do that, whatever. But she kept being like very erratic. Flash forward, she put the order in wrong and the nurse comes in to titrate my PIT or turn it on. Or I was already on it at the time. Like it was the first time it was going up. And I was like, oh, that's twice the rate the doctor and I had talked about. And the nurse very kindly was just like, oh, okay, like, let me just call her, like she's in the hospital, blah, blah, blah. This woman comes in hot. She starts yelling at us. Like, we didn't have our doula there yet because I'm like, I'm not having you come for like my long ass induction. I could be here for a week. Who knows? And she, so anyway, this OB comes in. Thank God my husband was there, because I think I would have thought I was hallucinating just from like not sleeping well at that point for like 24 hours being in the hospital. She's just like, what are you doing? She goes off on like a random tangent about like her attending like C-sections for failed home births and like people declining care and like just like a lot of like random thoughts. And I was like, I'm already hooked up to Pitt. I'm in a hospital. Like, I don't know what your other experiences were, but nonetheless, like, that's not where we're at. Like, I don't understand why this is what we're talking about. She's just like, I've talked to the hospital lawyers about you, and like, I'm like, I'm going to need you to sign an AMA form. And just, it was wild. And by the way, my husband's a lawyer. So he was like, which I don't think she knew. And he actually is a very like positive, like, you meeting him wouldn't know he's a lawyer. And he was just like, started getting his kind of like work type voice. And he was like, you need to lower your voice. Like, this is not okay. Like, and I think this was really nice to hear this from him. He's like, my wife is a very highly educated, informed person, and we are making decisions with you about things, but you're not going to just tell us what's going on. And I have no idea why you're asking us to sign an AMA form, because we're not asking for anything you didn't agree for to. And like, she hadn't let us spoken before that. And she's like, what do you mean? And then we're like, you put in the rate twice as much as we talked about. She's like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then the rest of the time pretended like nothing had happened. We find out later it's because the other provider had just come off like a 48-hour shift or something. And then this provider, her father had come through the ER and was dying up in the ICU. And she didn't want to call in her moonlighter unless she actually needed to. And I was her only laboring patient, and I was just an induction. So anytime there was something going on with me, she had to leave his bedside, which is like obviously not my problem. And I feel for her situation, but it really kind of like helped explain what was going on and how erratic it was. But then at the same time, like, you shouldn't be in a position to be making medical decisions about me then. Like, that's, having a provider is trusting a provider, you know?
Absolutely. And trusting that they're in the right headspace to be able to soundly make decisions or recommendations for you.
Exactly. And that was not happening. And that also just started making me feel like really caged. And I think around that point was when we were like, I called my doula and I was like, you know, I think we need backup support. Like, this is just not it. And I still didn't have an epidural or anything at the time. And I'm like going up on my Pitt. I ended up maxing out my Pitt during that time, because I just, for me, I didn't want an epidural because I didn't want to be sequestered to a bed. I wanted to be able to move around. Like, that was my thing. It wasn't so much about the pain management or being like natural. It was more like, I felt very claustrophobic about the idea of being in a bed. And that just like, I was like, so I need her here to like help me through this, because these contractions are terrible. Now having had like an all natural feedback, like, Pit contractions are the pits. Like, they are just a different beast altogether. And anyway, so she came and she was supporting us, and that was like really great. And then they were intermittently checking me, and I'm still like, at, you know, the next day, I didn't have very supportive nurses at the time. They kept turning up my Pit, even when I was like, I have a good contraction form. They're like, no, let's go. And I got to 8 centimeters, and I was just like, I need a break. I got an epidural. And by the way, like, the baby, like, I wanted to be on continuous monitoring. I had one of those like Mobi free moving contraction and fetal heart tone monitor. And that was great for me, because like, I was like in the shower, like, it was the best of what I would be able to get in that regard. But like, for me, once again, not really thinking about my trauma, like, I wanted to know like every potential heart tone and how this baby was tolerating labor, especially with an intervention like Pitocin. I was like, only 8 centimeters. Like, this is the third day of this. And it was a Sunday morning, and I was like, I need an epidural. Get that. And then I end up sleeping for an hour, and then I wake up and I'm complete. Now, like, looking back on things, I'm like, I kind of wish I had done the epidural earlier. You know, hindsight is 2020, because I feel like part of what ended up happening was like, I have this hip injury that causes tension in my pelvic floor. I think with the Pitocin just being so strong at that point, my body was just like literally clenching down and just like not allowing me to like have him move down because it was so rapid once I got that epidural where things really progressed. And then I started pushing, got to pushing for 2 hours. His head started swelling a bit. He's still tolerating things. And my doctor was like, oh, his head is asynclitic. And I was like, well, this is really late in the game to be talking about this now because there's other things we could have done to kind of help this. And I was like, do you want to try to manually rotate him? And she was just like, no. And so I keep pushing. And then we decided to turn down my epidural a bit. And I guess when we did that, it kind of like stopped working very suddenly. And I started getting like kind of clustered contractions at the same time. And basically what happened was like him being like almost crowning, like right there to my pelvic floor kind of snapping down with all of that sudden pain. And he kind of ended up going in reverse basically. And then I just kept having these really intense contractions. Like my uterus was just like, I'm done. So at that point, we were like, it's time for a C-section, which was also just like so interesting because I talked to my husband about afterwards. He's like, it's really true, like a cascade of interventions. Like he had heard these things in our birth classes and like before why I didn't want them. He was like, wow, it's really interesting to see it all played out just because, you know, interventions are necessary sometimes, but some of this stuff probably wasn't or could have been done differently. But once again, hindsight is 2020. I go back, and I think it's also just kind of part of it was so demoralizing too, like when they're like, not to be crass, but like they're shaving you for like a C-section and stuff, but they're not even kind of treating you. They're just kind of treating you like they're prepping a sterile field. They're not like acknowledging you. And it's just like, I'm also a nurse and like I work here. Like no one is like engaging with me. And like when I was in labor, like I had a coworker stopped by, like a NICU coworker, and she like kind of scolded me about like your GBS positive and you have MAC and your fluid and your baby's post states, like, what are you doing? And it's like, well, I'm here under the advisement of my OB. Like, I don't know what to say to you. And also like, this isn't helpful right now, you know? And I had some nurses who were also just like, not the vibe. And it was just a real disappointment because part of the reason I wanted to give birth ultimately in my hospital system and even the birth center that I was going to before they risk out to one of our hospitals was like, the idea is like, you know, I'm amongst people I trust. And like that did not happen. And then during my section, my spinal wore off and all of a sudden I felt everything. And I've been in so many sections. Your anesthesiologist is not supposed to leave your bedside. And they did. And my husband's like holding, he went to go grab the baby. I'm still open. And he comes back and I'm like, help, help. Because I couldn't project that I was like in pain because I was in so much pain. And then he, you know, like in the process saw me like completely open on the other side. Eventually the anesthesiologist comes back and is like, oh God, and like pushes a bunch of fentanyl and knocks me out, leaves him next to my unconscious body holding our baby. And I come to 2 hours later and it was just like horrible. And even like since then, I've like looked at my op report and stuff. And there's just like so many things that like, I just feel like even having a conversation about, like he was so far down in my pelvis that they had to put a fetal pillow in my vagina to push him back up. And like, just the idea that like, just because I was numb, people were putting things in my body, but not like telling me was just, is still so insane to me. You know, like sneak peek, like I, with my VBAC, I ended up having a postpartum hemorrhage. And my midwife, like they even told me, like when they were giving me a suppository that like at that point, I definitely wouldn't have felt anyway, just because like that, and that didn't prevent them from acting any faster. Like it was just part of that informed care that just makes you not feel like a piece of equipment.
Yeah. And there's a difference too, because you know, I tell my doula clients this all the time, like sometimes we might not have an opportunity to make a like well thought through decision, right? Like in a true like emergency, things like that. Sometimes your medical provider is going to act, but they can also narrate what they're doing. Like you're saying, like it might not have been an opportunity where like there was any decision about a fetal pillow, right? But yeah, just the opportunity to be told like, hey, baby's really low, here's what we're going to do next. All of those things humanize us, right? And it's the one surgery that you are awake for. And it matters. It matters that we don't get desensitized to birth.
Yeah. Even if someone's numb, even if someone's consenting and like, yes, let's go for the C-section. Still just like, it's my body you're acting on and I'm still present here. And we'd even ask for like a more gentle C-section, and they advertise that on the hospital's website. And of course they're like, oh no, we don't actually have any of that material. And like, it was just kind of, you know, the baby came out and he was fine. Like he tolerated everything. I found out also from my op report, he was OP. No one had told me that. And especially with having the doula, I think if we had known that and we talked about that afterwards, like we would have definitely focused on different moves during that time just to try and like get him to kind of spin, so to speak. And so that was all just like, okay, well, that also makes sense. Well, I was probably having pre-dremal labor for like a week before. And it's just, it was just not good. And I remember like my section itself, someone else came in to do it because that original doctor who was like, I think she was aware enough that she's like, I cannot do surgery right like now. And so the person who came in did a great job. And I was up and walking around within like an hour or so of being conscious. Like, and I recovered really well, but I was also like, I don't want to do this again. Like, also, I just know that, you know, with every C-section, you're like more likely to have complications, adhesions, like things that I'm just like, I don't want to necessarily be running around with a toddler and having to be recovering with this. I even had a cousin who her C-section like opened when she had her second or third, just because she was moving around so much. But anyway, so like I remember at my post-op appointment, I was just like, I want to be back. How's
taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
Is that going to happen? Because like I had heard about that before, like in my just like education or other people having it. I feel like they used to be much more common, like even in the 90s, just like a section didn't mean you always had a section. And she was just like, you gotta have like 18 months between births. And like she just kind of was clearly like, slow your roll. And I was like, well, I'm not coming back here. I got pregnant with my daughter when my son was 17 months, kind of started trying around 15 months. And I had during that time, like really tried to start educating myself, talked to my doula, started listening to the VBAC Link. I would look at the labor boards at all four of the hospitals in our healthcare system to see like which practices are doing VBACs, because the hospital I was at, not doing them. And that was like really helpful. But then I ended up starting my care at the one place that had the most VBACs. And I had like, even when I would get pulled to that NICU, I would talk to the L&D staff there and they're like, oh, they're great, whatever. And then I went there and my first appointment, she like starts just jumping in immediately to, well, it's like, I don't think she looked at my chart at all to realize I was a NICU nurse, which also shouldn't matter. But like, and then she's like, oh, abruption. And, you know, your baby before was pretty big. Why don't we wait to talk about these things until you're 37 weeks? And I was like, I'm out. Like, I'm not, nope. Like, I know how. Yeah, I was like, I know how this goes, and I'm not waiting until like the 11th hour. Like, I already had to transfer my Carelate in my last pregnancy, and it was did not go well. So I used like the local ICANN group, tried to find some local practices, and I was able very fortunately to find a practice like an hour away from my house, but the hospital was only half an hour away. And the hospital had recently come to an agreement with our hospital system that they'd have like a reciprocal relationship. So I was like, all my hospital care would be covered. The midwife care wouldn't, but it was partially covered. And because we knew from early on we were able to budget, we were also not buying a house at the time. So that helped. And they were just amazing. Like, I went there and they were a team of, at the time, three certified nurse midwives. They're back up to three. They lost one of their midwives at the time. They went to like a different healthcare system, just not in like a bad way, but just kind of like they needed different hours, something a bit more predictable for their personal life. But that person who transferred out, she was amazing because she had had her section with her first child at the hospital I worked at, and had had a very similarly like traumatic experience for other reasons, but like some of it was very comparable. And I felt like she just constantly was holding space, which I feel like is a term that's become like so throwaway, but it's true. I felt like every time I'd come in, and she was often with her different students, she was like actively holding space and trying to like make me pause to be like, you experienced trauma in your birth, but you also experienced trauma in your job. And like, you really need to think about those things because like you're carrying that with you. And I just helping me to slow down and think about those things and seek support for those things or even talk through them. Like so much of my doula care the second time around with the same doula was like processing my first birth and also just trying to process like ways to, I guess, like get through everything about my job, to try and compartmentalize without fully dissociating and recognizing like I'm continuing while I'm pregnant to absorb more and more trauma in my job. So how do I do that while protecting my space? And part of that for me was also like started not talking to coworkers much about my VBAC plans, like a couple of them, but not a lot, just because I felt like I would automatically be questioned about it. And it's like, I don't really need to justify to you like why I'm doing this. And like, to be honest, the way I feel comfortable with decisions is like, I make it my life. I feel like this is the researcher in me. Like I just made my VBAC my identity at the time where I did like all the research, all the things, like I knew all the stats, and like, because I found comfort in that, like stats are just stats. They're not people, but like really reinforcing to myself, like I'm doing this because this is best practice and this is in my interest. And these are the things that like I feel supported with the risks and benefits. And this is what we want to do. Like me and my husband, who was supportive of me like this whole time. Like, I think he was just like, whatever you want to do on your journey, but he had his own trauma from our first delivery. You know, we were so grateful to become parents and we love our son so much, but we often talk about like how his birth was like just one of the hardest days of our lives, especially I think for him. And it just, we didn't want that to be with my daughter. So like going to, so it was Philly Midwife Collective and my doula was Mallory Kane with Thrive Birth, and they were both amazing. But, you know, with my daughters, when I was pregnant with her, I was really tired. I was working night shift at the time, NICU, still doing my chiropractic care, but I went to a practice. They both had used Webster technique, but the second one, I think what made the difference, and I like to say this to people, is like they had a massage therapist in-house. So after she would do her adjustment, there would be a 10-minute massage afterwards. And I think for me, that ended up making, I used to leave chiropractic care feeling really tense because of the way my body just kind of like holds those adjustments. And that really helped, I think, just like get her into a really good position from early on. But that was really great. Did acupuncture. And I think honestly, my biggest thing is like having these conversations with my providers and feeling like even if this does end up in a C-section, like I know they're making this choice because it's best for me. Like it's not just because this works for their timeline or what have you. Because there are definitely conversations along the way when they're like, you know, we have to talk about like if you get post-dates or something, like what is our comfort level versus yours? But they also would say things like, this is your birth experience and like this is my my practice and like this is what I as a provider feel comfortable with, but you also need to be comfortable with. And like we're coming at this as a relationship. And just because I don't feel comfortable with something doesn't mean I'm telling you you have to do this. It's more like working together to see those things. And if that's not something you want to do, then you should find other care because like you should be with a provider that supports what your plans are. And I think like really making that an ongoing conversation really informed also my own practice as a NICU nurse. And like at the time I was in NP school for women's health, which I still am like in my last year of now, and gender-related care, and just realizing like that's why I wanted to be a provider. That's why I'm a nurse, is like I want to be trauma-informed with people to actually have those dialogues and recognize that like people aren't just trying to be reckless with their decision-making. People often have other things that are motivating what they're doing. And just because like you as the provider feel a different level of comfort doesn't mean that you have to be so oppressive about what that means. Like your job is to educate. And I honestly, like I was really privileged to have that experience with them. And towards the end, I was also really lucky. And I mean, I feel very lucky for this. I went to spontaneous labor at 39 weeks exactly. Like I was on the 26th. It's actually my daughter's birthday tomorrow. We had her first birthday today, the 14th of December. She was due the 22nd, and I woke up at like 5 in the morning with very regular contractions, and to the point where like having, you know, been as I was with my son, where I was like, oh, this is going to take 3 days. I was just like, oh, this isn't real. It's just like, I didn't even wake up my husband. I was like, oh, these are going on for like, I was timing them like, oh, about a minute, and they're only 3 minutes apart, but this can't be real. And like, I had done like acupuncture every day, other day for like a week before, because I really didn't want to get to that position of being post-dates and having to have another induction. And that really seemed to kick things off. And then I ended up going in the shower, and then they only picked up, and I was like, oh no, like this is real. And so like my husband, I heard him moving around upstairs to go to the bathroom or something, because it was a Sunday. And I texted him a screenshot of my like contraction timer from the past 40 minutes. And he was like, oh shit, like we have to go now. And we have to call your mom, like, because we have a 2-year-old. He had just been turned to me at the time. And it was just kind of wild, because then I started feeling the urge to push. And I was like, this is so wildly different than last time.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It was just like so fast. Like I feel like so much of my second pregnancy was like me trying to be present, processing my actual pregnancy, but the birth itself was like wild. Like I thought I was going to deliver in the car. I did not. I got to the hospital. I literally ended up having to like be on all fours in the elevator, because I was on the second floor intermittently, because my contractions at that point were like a minute apart, and they were lasting for about like a minute each, and I couldn't walk. It was wild. I get into triage, I vomit everywhere, and I was like, oh my god, I know what this means. I'm in transition. And so then I was just like, because I had known what pushing felt like with an epidural last time and how it really relaxed my pelvic floor, I was like, I want the epidural now. And they're like, oh honey, no. Like, it's too late for you. And I was like, no. I was like aspiring for all natural, but in the back of my mind, I was like, I'm going to get that pain relief as soon as I need it this time. You know, I'm not doing this. Like, I just need to have that as my safety net. And that was not what happened. But then it was funny, because my midwife, they use they, them pronouns, both of them. They had just come from another birth, and like literally the two of them were driving, and the one just like dropped them off at the front of the hospital. It was like, go, you gotta go. And I thought it was going to be so precipitous because the labor itself had gone from like 0 to 1,000. And then sneak peek, I ended up pushing for over 2 hours. Like, once again, I think it was just like my pelvic floor is really tight and not having that epidural. But I think that was another thing that was like great. And I talked to my doula about afterwards. They really gave me the time and space to keep pushing. Like, she was crowning for forever. My doula jokes because she was also our birth photographer. She took so many pictures of my baby crowning because she's like, you know, normally this is very fast and I wanted to get all the angles. And she was just like, that did not happen for you. So I have like 50 photos of her, like just ahead, just right there. And like, it was great because like the nurses at the hospital, fantastic. Everyone was like so supportive. I was like constantly moving. I was like in all fours. I was on my side, like all the positions to try and get this baby like out. And they were so supportive of that. And I was also like screaming and crying and being like, well, how won't she get out? Like, it was very much like a weird movie. And it was funny too, because like this was just the nurse in me, but like my water hadn't broken. And then I was asking my doula, I was asking my midwife, I was like, you need to wait, break my water. Like, I just need some space. And they were like, no, like, why not? Like, just leave that kind of cushion. Cause at that point she was crowning and it was like bulging. And I was like, no, I need the space, like do it. And she's like, or they were like, okay, broke my water. And then a little bit later, I'm still pushing and I'm just like, this is going on forever. And I was like, you need to cath me. And they were like, I've never asked someone to be catheterized. Like, no one's ever asked me to be catheterized. And I was like, I need space. Like, anything I can do. I was like, I don't even think my bladder is that full, but like, we just got to do. And they were like, okay. And it was just like very funny because it was just, it did help. Like, all these things helped. And eventually, like, basically, once she kind of got under that pelvic band, she kind of shot out. And they were also like, they had offered for my husband to catch her. And he was like, I don't know, because he's not really a medical person. And he was just like, I don't know. And they were like, are you sure? And he was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And he was like thinking about gloving up. And then the nurses were making fun of him because they're like, it's your baby. So then he just like, in all of our photos, he's got these like bloody hands and he's just like walking around like this afterwards, like, I did it. But he ended up catching her. And I think I have to double check which photo I submitted for like the picture, but there's this photo of her when she first came out. She just like put her arms out like a cross, like stunned, but just also this like having this like zest, like I'm taking up space. And I have this just like extreme look of relief on my face. Because like all of my birth pictures, I just look like anguish, like ugly cry, like please make it stop. Like, it was, my birth photos did not look, what's the word, like
aesthetic.
I don't know, serene. And then, yeah, but she came out and she was great. And like, I was able to do skin to skin with her and it just felt like so exceptionally healing in that moment. And it also just felt like amazing to feel like my whole team was there supporting me. And even if things had taken a turn, I knew that everyone was there for my interests, not their own. And that was like amazing. And I did end up having a postpartum hemorrhage. I lost like 1700 cc's, like a lot of blood. And I think it's just from the extended pushing and the fact that they run in my family. But once again, everything was handled so amazing. Like my midwife, they like immediately were like, okay, we're doing this, this, and this. And they told me every step of the way, including like a suppository and all the things, like just to keep me informed. And I was like, whatever you need to do. But I felt very much humanized in that moment. I ended up having my husband finish the skin to skin with my daughter because I felt like really tired. But it was also funny because there was like a little bit of MAC. There was NICU provider there and it wasn't my hospital, but they did her initial assessment like on my chest during that time. They're like, she's fine, like there's no reason for us to take her away from you. They gave me a bulb syringe because she was a little junky and they're like, if you want to suction her, you can. And so like I was doing the suctioning. I have these pictures of me doing it, like, and it was just like kind of amazing that everyone was like, there's nothing going on here. We're able to do extended cord clamping until her cord went completely white. And it was just like, once again, like there's nothing wrong here. And I just feel like all the births I go to, it's like everything's just like, okay, we got to rub the baby and stimulate them as much as possible, even when they're crying, or there's no reason to take the baby away, but like, oh, we should just in case, because you never know, and let's get the best view of the baby and this and that. And it was just amazing to be in a hospital system that, like, people, you know, if there had been an issue, I'm sure they would have escalated her care, but they also recognize, like, this is just a physiological birth. And honestly, like, it was great. And I was able to heal pretty well. I had like 3 second-degree tears that were stitched, and that I was kind of expecting my vagina to hurt. But it was funny because the thing that actually was the sorest, I think, because the most progress I was making with her when I was delivering her was on my back, which was not how I wanted to deliver her. So I had a lot of like butt pain in the weeks after. Like, I feel like that was the thing that took the longest to recover from. And that was also like interesting, just like talking to my providers, and they're like, huh. I feel like every pregnancy thus far I've had like something where I'm like, well, I'm in this world, and yet how am I still surprised? I'm like, that took forever to recover from. And I did like pelvic floor physical therapy afterwards and stuff, and that really helped. It was like my first, it was like the postpartum night sweats. Like, I didn't expect that. It's just like, it's just funny, like even just being in this stuff, there's always something that throws you. But yeah, so like that is kind of like what ended up happening. And I was really lucky too, because I didn't end up needing a blood transfusion, because I came in, I've been taking iron supplements, like liquid iron, just so it wouldn't like back you up as much from like my second trimester on. And as a result, when I came in, my like hemoglobin was actually kind of high. So even though I lost so much, I never went down to a critical threshold to like need support. And they let me go home like the next day. Like, honestly, the only reason we delayed until that evening was because I couldn't decide on a name. And I was just like, I don't want to leave without a name. And yeah, it was just like a completely different experience. And I think it was also just incredibly healing for my husband too. Like, he talks about that. And I think like he and my daughter are so bonded, not that they wouldn't be otherwise, but just like having had this thing that just, he got to do the skin to skin with her. He got to catch her. I feel like there was just something that like, it was really helpful for all of us in this like really healing way. And also, as I said before, just kind of like how I feel as a provider now, and like what I look, how I talk to my patients, even just in a NICU setting, not even thinking about like being a nurse practitioner one day, and just like really trying to hold space for like their trauma, the way they're talking about it, and not trying to rush them through processing things, because like no one ever wants to go to a NICU. Most people never expect that to happen. Like, you didn't get the experience you thought you deserved, because you did deserve, like everyone deserves a better experience than this. And I don't know, it's like, I like to think of myself as an empathetic person, but it definitely like, I feel like helped my heart grow much more to continue like holding space for other people and these different types of experiences that we kind of like are unfortunately bonded over the trauma of what's going on. But yeah,
but it's when you live that experience and you live it in different ways, then it just hits different. And yeah, my first, he was in the NICU for 7 days, and so a NICU nurse was the first one to change his diaper. And the way that you show up for your families, like, it's just so beautiful. And the way that you care for them and the way that we are cared for in our birth experiences, good or bad, that's what does stay with us. And there's something to be said about a good start in life. And I love that your husband was able to experience that difference too and have such a sweet bond with your daughter. Like, that's so special, and it does matter. So what a beautiful story.
No,
so earth. I'm so, so happy for you, and congratulations.
Thanks. Like I said, I think it's so funny when I talk about, because I feel like my son's birth just took so long, and then hers in the scheme of things was so short. And like, so much of what I think of when I think of that time with her is like the being pregnant and like just trying to process everything. And my doula was able to make it, even though things were really, because I ended up pushing for so long. And she was just such a calming presence, and She's actually a counselor by training as well. So I just felt like, it just felt like, I don't know. Everyone says like your team matters, and like it really does. And you can do all the things, but like at the end of the day, it's like having people in your corner and having providers who really recognize what your mutual goals are and like care about you and having the dialogues that are necessary, because it is a relationship. It's not this hierarchical system. Like, it really makes such a difference.
Yeah. I would love to talk just for a second. You had a doula, the same doula. I have a very similar experience with my doula. Was both at my cesarean and at my VBAC. And I think a lot of people that listen to our podcast are hesitant to hire a doula of like, what if I end up in a cesarean? And obviously you had a doula for both your VBAC and your C-section, but can you talk a little bit about how it was, why you hired a doula again? You know, you ended up in a C-section the first time you hired a doula. How did you not end up in a space that you were like, man, I like missed out on something, or like my doula didn't do her job, or like all of those like kind of, I think, stereotypes that we see? Because as doulas, we can't promise an outcome, right? But we can promise support no matter the outcome. So can you touch on that a little bit about, you know, and why did you hire the same doula? All of those types of things.
So I interviewed a bunch of doulas the first time, and I just really felt like Mallory was the vibe. Like, she just had this really serene way of talking, and it's just like she also seemed very down to earth and just, I don't know, she clearly had been in a lot of births, but she seemed like she just was going to be a person who would make me feel calm. Like, when I know about myself, like when I feel pain, when I'm uncomfortable, I really like shut down and dissociate. Like, I don't really want people like in being around me, but like something about the way talking to her, she just made me feel like at ease, and felt like even when I'm in those moments of being locked down, like hearing her voice, or like she seemed like a person who would be able to anticipate my needs in a way that, like, you know, my husband's not medical. He was supportive of whatever I wanted to do, but it wasn't like he would necessarily be like, okay, I think this will be a good time to use the peanut ball, or like, let me use this fan to keep you cooled down, or like just in my ear, just be like, you got this, like just at those specific moments. Like, some, like, I just felt like she and I, for whatever reason, from early on, I just felt like she was gonna get it. And I don't know why that was, but if it was just literally the sound of her voice. But I just, like, even though my first birth went so terribly off the rails, like, having her as a support person, having her also to kind of interpret things for my husband, so that it wasn't my job to also be advocating for myself, but also explain to him like why we want to do stuff. Like, you can only go over so much ahead of time. But having someone who was able to kind of like support him too, and she wasn't in the actual cesarean section because that was in 2022 and you could only have one person with you, which I think sometimes is still the case. But at that point, we're still doing some COVID restrictions and what have you. But she was there like afterwards too. And even when I was like unconscious and able to just like talk to my husband or like text about certain things or just even explain what was going on. And then afterwards, still having postpartum care with her where she's like checking in. And then because she was with me at my first delivery, we were able to process a lot of the stuff that happened together. And for me, I think because I really like to give people the benefit of the doubt, I often sometimes doubt my own memory or experience, if that makes sense, where I'm just like, oh, it probably wasn't that bad, or like, oh, that person probably didn't sound like this. And so her being there for so much of it, even like just when my random coworker came in and was giving me a hard time about all my risk factors, like, she was there for that. She saw it. She saw how much that affected me. And like, even though I was just like, oh, I'm probably like reading into this like after the fact, because like you're also sleep deprived and whatever, she was like, no, that is what happened. Like, your memory is accurate. Like, I don't know. She just had this way of reinforcing things. And so for me, even without knowing that she had had VBAC clients before and had taken VBAC trainings, and like, I just knew that I wanted her around again. And then ultimately, I feel like because my delivery was really precipitous, which was a good thing, you know, especially at the last one, it took so long. So much of the doula care for me was like the time before the birth and really trying to like work through not only experiences of my first birth, but also like, what do I want here? Like, what are my ultimate goals? Because you can't control everything. You don't know what's going to happen. Like, I'm feel very fortunate that I ended up with a VBAC. But like I said, with my son, like I did all the things I was supposed to do. You know, I chugged the raspberry leaf tea. I took the dates. I did all the, like I did all of the things and this still happened because sometimes things just happen that are outside of our control or we make decisions in time because we don't have the foresight to know what that's going to mean. And like we only have as much information as we have at that time to make the best decisions for ourselves. And like, trying to also afford myself like the grace of like past Rachel didn't know this stuff. And like, also just, I think, you know, if I had, this is why I'm like, I feel like everyone should listen to the VBAC link. Even if you're a first time parent, I feel like there's so much to glean from this podcast about just like really understanding what your decision options look like and what these cascades of intervention can mean and that they are very much necessary sometimes. But, you know, even looking at something like, you know, when I was being pressured about like, oh, you're post-dates, like, aren't you worried about having like an HIE situation or just like a hypoxic episode? So when your baby is basically like deprived of oxygen or is like, because of something, even just like aspirating meconium, which is more likely to happen post-dates. But then it's like, if you actually look at the data, most cooling, which is what you do to try and treat those hypoxic episodes as a protective neurological factor, happen at 39 weeks. And if you look at other things, oftentimes it's secondary to Pitocin because babies don't tolerate Pitocin well. And that's like with an Vermont Oxford study, which is something that looks specifically at NICU outcomes. And that's like that's an evidence-based thing, but that's not what we often talk about. But it's like, look at all the people we're electively inducing at 39 weeks or even at 40 weeks when we don't actually know when they conceive sometimes because not everyone's perfectly tracking their cycles. And I've seen that even like we've had elective inductions for babies and they come out and it's like, you talk to the parent, this happened recently, and they were like, yeah, they told me based on how he was measuring. By the way, mom was 6 feet tall, basically, and dad was 6'5". Like, oh, they changed my date to 3 weeks earlier, and the baby came out at, like, the first percentile for, like, what they alleged was his due date, and then he proceeded to act up and do all these things because he clearly was not 37 weeks because she always had erratic periods, and so she was just like, well, there was only two times because of travel with her husband that this could have happened. And like the likely conception, which is what she gave, they were like, oh no, that can't possibly be true. This baby's measuring really big at 14 weeks. And it's like, okay, well, ultrasounds, whatever. Anyway, that's like,
and at 14 weeks
yeah, it's just like crazy stuff like that. But anyway, going back to the doula experience of it all is just like, I knew that she had given me so much comfort the first time, and I really wanted her to be there the second time and also be that support from my husband, because I was like, once again, you only know what you know, and like you don't know how things are going to shake out, and you can only prepare as much as you can, but like I'm not going to be able, like he's not medical and he also doesn't work in this world. There's only so much you can shorthand. And I knew from my first experience as well, I should say, being a NICU nurse, even though a lot of people I was with do not work directly with me because they knew that they were talking to me in a medical shorthand that I don't think most patients would experience, that I think made things that much more confusing for him. Because like, even when I was like asking for them, even the second delivery for them to cath me, he's just like, what is that? You know? And like the dialogue I'm having back and forth with my midwife about why or why not to do this, like he's just kind of there for the ride. And he's like, I have no idea what this means. And then it's like, and then he was like, oh, that's a tube they're putting in your urethra. Thank you. You're like, I don't, you know, he just was like, what even with being there for these conversations, because he just doesn't know what they meant. And that makes sense. But she was amazing. Like, I just even remember when things got really, really hard with how long it was taking for her to really descend and come out, and she was taking her time crowning, which was like, oh, this is so my daughter now. She's just like, I'm going to do what I want. But she just, like, I remember just, like, was saying things in my ear in such a way that, like, just made me really feel like I got this. And, like, I'm here and I just have to keep going. And I feel like that's just, you can never go wrong with more people being in your corner, right? Like, I was really lucky with this birth team that everyone ended up being amazing. But with my first, that wasn't the case. And just having that extra person outside my husband who was really, like, struggling, especially by the third day, is also not sleeping, is also really scared, is not sure what's going on. That kind of relief and support, like, you can't make up for that. Like, it's worth all the money in the world to me.
Wow. Okay. Well, all such, like, important conversations, Rachel, and just, like, such valuable insight. And I can't wait to see you blossom into this NP that's just going to, like, I think change lives, because you've experienced both, and, you know, both really great care and the really hard stuff. And so just thank you for taking the time to share with us today and to share your story. If people want to find you as you, like, venture into your new practice or things like that, is there a place that they can connect with you?
Yeah, I guess I'm on Instagram, just like my private account, but I feel like randomly post lots of stuff related to birth and healthcare on there. I'm at Prongs Lives, and yeah, I guess for right now that's kind of all I'm doing. It's just like posting pictures of my babies and random rants about, like, medical interventions being unnecessary, but that's just me.
That's amazing. That's, well, perfect. We could have deep dived into so many things that we talked about. So, like, listeners, I hope you're taking notes. And if you have more questions about anything, it sounds like Rachel's an open book. You can message her about nurse stuff, processing stuff. You hit on ultrasound stuff, stats, prep, chiropractic, and massaging after. Like, what? So much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, like, the VBAC link community was, like, so amazing, not just listening to the podcast, but, like, having that online support group on Facebook. And like I said, Jessica, who, this is why I'm like, if anyone wants to message me, I don't know if I could provide you with any additional insight but just as a sounding board, like, I reached out to her on Instagram and just from listening to her podcast episode. And I just feel like, just having someone who kind of got it and where I was coming from when I didn't really feel like there was anyone else in my orbit who was like that, you know, who's experienced all this stuff and still choosing to do this, even with all so much just, like, not support from colleagues or what have you. Just, like, it was just awesome. Like, I never would have had that connection if it wasn't for the VBAC link and even just, like, those intermittent messages, like, they made a difference.
Ugh. Yeah. Oh, so good. Well, when you set yourself off into nurse practitioner world, will you let us know so that we can send people your way?
Yeah, that would be awesome. It's like, it's only like a year away, but it just feels so far at this point. I'm just like, it's been a wild couple of years.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much again, Rachel.
Yeah, thanks for giving me this opportunity. I can't believe it's my turn to go. That's just, like, I don't know. Such a silver lining to all of this, you know? All of the upheaval. It all ended so well. I'm very lucky.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community.
One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.